Hello and welcome to F1 Nation's preview of the Japanese Grand Prix. I'm Tom Clarkson and I'm joined this week by the 1996 world champion Damon Hill. Hello, Damon.
Hi, Tom. And you're still in Australia, I see.
Well, it's dark outside. I've gone up to Queensland, actually, and to Port Douglas. And Formula One seems to have moved north to the tropics. Also with us this week, Jesus Balsero from Diario AS. Jesus, how are you?
Hello, Tom. And I'm not in Australia. I'm in Spain.
Jesus, how do you feel about Tom being on holiday when you're working so hard?
I don't know, because Australia seems a nice place to be, but I don't think I would be able to spend 3 weeks away from home just for two races. And maybe you will be happier in Japan without that jet lag, but when you come back after Japan, I don't want to beat you.
Well, do you know what? You've hit the nail on the head. For the first time, I'm not going to be jet lagged at the Japanese Grand Prix, and I'm quite excited about that. But guys, before we throw it forward to Japan, I did just want to throw it back to Carlos Sainz's victory in Australia last week. I mean, Jesus, how did that go down in Spain?
It was huge. It was really huge. On one side, because of the surgery he had 2 weeks before in Jeddah, but I think that the hardest hit that Carlos had this winter is not the surgery, is being dropped off by Ferrari for next year, and to come back from that to be a strong driver at the start of the season. He beat Charles in Bahrain. He overtook him twice. Then he wins the race in Australia. He's the only driver who's won races apart from Red Bull in the last 12 months. And that's an achievement that is also good for him to show he has a chance on the market. He can be in a top car for next year. I think it's really the best comeback I could ever imagine from Carlos. And I'm not talking about the surgery. I'm talking about the winter.
Well, what about the job market then? What is being said back home about Carlos's prospects for next year?
I would say he could bet on a fast car. I think after the decision from Ferrari, everybody was saying, oh, he could go to Audi, he could be a Sauber driver next year. I don't think that's good enough for Carlos' prospects. And I guess there are other choices. The Aston is an interesting car if Fernando moves, but I would say now that why Fernando moves. Maybe it's Carlos the one that should move to a faster car. There is one Red Bull available. There is one Mercedes available. And the Carlos I saw in Melbourne, he should be on that list. I would say that maybe Red Bull now is on the verge to have two strong drivers, a strong pair. When you see the pair that Ferrari will have next year, you shouldn't go to racing with one top driver and one second driver, let's say. So I think Carlos can be that strong second driver in Red Bull. He can be a very strong driver in Mercedes. If he keeps going like he started the season, and there's no reason to think he won't, he should try something bigger than Audi, and maybe bigger than Aston as well.
He's shown himself to be a class act. I think he would fit in well with any front-running team. He's shown he's able to cope. And if you can cope with Ferrari, I think you can probably cope with most front-running teams. And proof that you're able to deliver, proof that you are professional. And I think he is very mature. Carlos has always been a grown-up, you know, in motor racing. He's very hardworking, he's thoughtful, and you know, lots of positives. And I mentioned this when we were talking about whether or not he'd go to Mercedes, because some people may say, well, why would Mercedes take a driver that's been cast aside by Ferrari? And I would say that would be a very, very poor analysis of his potential. You know, I think he's got so much more to offer than that. I think if you put Carlos in any top team, you're going to get 100% quality in return, and I think that he deserves a front running team, whether that's Red Bull, whether it's Mercedes. I mean, whether Mercedes can provide him with a front running team or not, that's another question. No disrespect to Sauber, but they're not there yet, you know. And I think he needs to be in a top name team.
He's ready to mount a championship challenge, and is this the year? We're going to come on to that now, because let's look ahead first of all to the Japanese Grand Prix. I mean, Damon, you're a man who's won at Suzuka twice, 1994, 1996. Is there a better racetrack in Formula One than Suzuka? I put it to you.
I don't think so. I think it is one of the tracks that have remained pretty much unaltered. I mean, they changed 130R and a few bits and pieces here and there, but generally speaking, it's the same track that we used to watch Ayrton Senna race on and Nigel Mansell all those years ago. You know, it's very brutal. If you make a mistake, there is virtually no mercy on this circuit at all. If you're going to have a big accident, if you get it wrong, the conditions are often inclement. You know, there's, I don't know what it's going to be like this time, because it's the first time we've had it this time of the year. I don't know what it's going to be like in spring. It could be quite nice, actually. But the track is, it's tricky to learn, demanding, demands precision. Max was unbelievable last year. He got, his qualifying lap was a thing of beauty. You can only do that if you've got utmost confidence. You need complete confidence to race around Suzuka.
Well, do we think Ferrari have a car that is going to give Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz the confidence that you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. Will it work? I mean, the conditions they had in Melbourne, where they ran a very soft tyre on a relatively unabrasive circuit, that's not the case in Suzuka. It's quite abrasive, and they'll be up on the upper end, I think, on the tyre compounds. I haven't seen what Pirelli have brought, but it'll probably be the super hard, won't it?
It is the hardest, yep. It's C1, C2, C3.
Yeah, so basically the loads they're going to generate are huge. You remember that picture of Nico Rosberg going through Digna 2, I think it was, and the car is just all bent out of shape. It's an unbelievable photograph. If anyone wants to fish it out, have a look at that one on the internet. It's just unbelievable, the loads that are going through these cars, through those corners. And that, of course, means the tyres get a hell of a workout. So different demands on the car to Melbourne, but the Ferrari, I think, is looking good. It's sort of more like, the track surface is more like Bahrain, so it will hurt you if you've got bad tyre dig, and that's obviously Red Bull's strength, so we'll have to wait and see how that pans out.
But Fred Vasseur, Ferrari team principal, did say after the race in Melbourne that our drivers are no longer in survival mode in the races, suggesting that they can push throughout. So, I mean, yes, looking at the Japanese Grand Prix, but also looking further down the road, Jesus, you know, can we think of Leclerc and Sainz as serious title contenders this year?
I expect a very strong Ferrari in certain tracks. I would say Miami, maybe Monaco, Austria further in the year, Singapore, but yes, as Damon said, Suzuka is Red Bull home right now. Shanghai, even 2 weeks afterwards, will be as well a very strong track for Red Bull. Maybe with the sprint events, we see different things because of the less free practice. But otherwise, it feels very complicated that Red Bull has a team challenging for the titles, especially Max. When you see Max, since 2022, he's won like 90% of the races. That's something amazing. Ferrari will be strong, but I don't think it's that kind of strong. And when you go to the traditional tracks like Suzuka, like most of the European season, Red Bull should make the difference, especially Max should make the difference. So Australia was amazing. It shouldn't be like that for the whole season.
I was excited after FP1 in Australia because Charles Leclerc said he knew then that they had a car that could challenge for the win. Then after qualifying, okay, Max Verstappen put it on pole, but Carlos Sainz in P2 said, yes, the car was good enough for a 15.9 second lap, which is what Max had done. And he had a little snap through the quick corners on his fastest lap. I feel that you're being harsh, Jesus. I feel Ferrari have a much better car this year. Yes, there will be races, and I think maybe you're right about Suzuka, but I feel that the thing about Ferrari this year is consistency. They have a car that will be more consistent in the races. We've seen tactically they're more consistent. We've seen their pit stops are more consistent. They have two really fantastic drivers, whereas we've seen, I mean, look at Melbourne, we saw Checo Perez struggling. You know, with the absence of Max Verstappen, he wasn't there to pick up the pieces. So the pressure is definitely on Red Bull, and Ferrari are the team to give it to them at the moment.
Well, Ferrari has nothing to lose. Let's say, I think we should have a bit of hope when you say Checo's race in Australia was was tough, there's no reason to think that he was stuck behind slower cars. He was slower than the cars he had in front. He was behind two Ferraris, two McLarens. We didn't get to see Max fighting against Carlos. I would love to see that, because there were reasons to think, when you see free practice, that Max wouldn't have been faster than Carlos. At least he wouldn't have gone after first corner. It should have been a complicated race for him. He should have had pressure till the last stint. That was Carlos' plan at first. He was trying to keep himself close to Max for the first two stints, and then at the last one, just try something different, maybe add some tire advantage or so. So yeah, we missed that. I hope we get to see that soon during the season. I hope I'm wrong and Ferrari has a title contender for the second part of the season. But I do think that Japan would be a very clear opportunity for Red Bull, and I don't expect Ferrari being that close then.
You made a point about Checo, but they did say that he had something wrong with his floor, which is costing him downforce. So that could explain why he wasn't able to make progress in the race.
It's also a good thing to point that, yeah, maybe, as you say, at least Red Bull has the pressure, because we see mechanical failures. I guess the problem on cars, on Max cars, it's just a mistake on the garage. So this is new. Last year, we didn't have that. For 22 races, 23 races last year, we only saw Red Bull being a step behind in Singapore for sporting reasons, because the track didn't suit well to their car. But we didn't see mistakes. Now we see that sort of mistakes.
Damon, do you think Max will win the Grand Prix, if he does win the Grand Prix, of course, in Suzuka, by 19 seconds, or do you feel it's closer this year?
I want to say it's closer. I want to say that, Tom. I think this is going to be a big test for the competition against Red Bull at Suzuka. I think this is really going to test the efficiency, aero efficiency, tyre wear efficiency on the car as well. But Ferrari quick in a straight line, and it is a lot of straight line, a lot of high speed stuff in Suzuka. And I honestly don't think, I hope, what I really hope is that Ferrari are able to take the race to Red Bull during the actual race itself. I think qualifying will still see Max on pole by probably the similar amount, 2/10 maybe, 3/10 or something like that. The question is whether Ferrari have got good tyre dig, and we're watching the FP 1, 2, 3 on that one, and to get some clues. But you have to say, the question is always going to be asked, did they win in Melbourne because Max broke down? We'll never know the answer. So we need to get them to beat Max in a straight race. Once that happens, and I think we're not getting close. I think we're getting close to that. And maybe wishful thinking on my part, not because I don't want Max to win anything. I just want to see some racing, and I want to see a championship open up. But if they do, wow, that will be really shocking for the whole of Formula One, because it means that something can be done about this Red Bull runaway.
It seems like everyone is either starting a side hustle or becoming their own boss at the moment. And you know what they're hearing a lot of? That's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. And it's revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Shopify simplifies online and in-person selling to ensure your brand reaches its full potential. And it's got all of your sales channels covered, from a shopfront-ready POS system and its all-in-one e-commerce platform to social media marketplaces like Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. Now, every business is different, and Shopify knows that. And that's what I like about it. It doesn't matter if you're selling bespoke clothing or personalized jewelry. Its industry-leading tools are designed to give you complete control over your brand without the hassle of learning design or coding. And it's incredibly empowering for entrepreneurs. It doesn't matter where you are on your journey or how big your goals are. Shopify is here to support your success every step of the way, with its award-winning help and an extensive business course library on hand to guide you at every turn. It's time to get serious about selling and get Shopify today. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a £1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/nation, all lowercase. Go to shopify.co.uk/nation to take your business to the next level today. Shopify.co.uk/nation. We've discussed the challenge of Ferrari, but what about McLaren? They've just secured their best result of the season in Melbourne, with Lando Norris coming home in P3 and Oscar Piastri P4. They're now heading back to the scene of one of their strongest weekends in 2023.
And for the second time in 7 days, Lando Norris is heading to the podium in second position. What a superb weekend for him and McLaren. Because it's not just one driver crossing the line to take a podium position. For the first time in Formula One, Oscar Piastri takes his place on the podium in just his 16th Grand Prix.
Double podium. Two of us up there. We're coming. We're coming for Red Bull.
He's coming for Red Bull, but can they do it now, this weekend? Where do we think McLaren are at?
They're making progress. They're looking more and more solid with every race that goes by. And they weren't happy with their first race at Bahrain. And they were saying that they've got some changes, but they learned a lot in that first race. And so they've made some progress, I think, gradually making some progress. It was strong, although they were unhappy with Saudi Arabia with their speed. They got their setup, I think, wrong for the aero setup for Saudi, but they seem to have got things in the sweet spot for Melbourne.
And Rob Marshall, formerly of Red Bull, now at McLaren, joined at the beginning of the year. He was in Melbourne to oversee proceedings for the first time. And by all accounts, he's a very practical engineer, and he's no doubt helped to maximise the potential of this year's McLaren. I mean, Jesus, what do you think about McLaren? Are they as close to Red Bull as Ferrari on a Suzuka-type track?
We'll see. I think that thanks to this calendar shakeup, we will get to see a very interesting comparison between Japan 23 and Japan 24, because it hasn't been that long between the two races, and it's the perfect test to say which cars have performed a very good winter at the factory and which hasn't. Maybe McLaren gets a small step behind. Maybe it's not a step back, but Ferrari getting closer to Red Bull and maybe overtaking McLaren in that sort of track. Maybe they didn't get the most of their car for the first three races. And I agree that Suzuka, just like it was last year with Qatar as well, maybe the strongest track for that McLaren last year. If it's still the case this year, at least we will get to see different cars behind Red Bull, just like it happened in 2023, not only the Ferrari, because for the start of the season, it was only Ferrari that really got closer to Red Bull in three very different tracks, such as Sakhir, Jeddah and Melbourne.
Damon, can I ask you about team orders? Because it always seems to come down in Lando's favour. I mean, the Japanese Grand Prix last year, Oscar led him through to take P2. We saw it again in Melbourne last weekend, Oscar letting Lando through on the faster strategy. But at some point, is Oscar going to push back and say, hang on, can we just fight this out on track between us?
Maybe. I think what he has to do though, before that happens, is to put himself in a position that is convincingly the best foot forward for McLaren. So McLaren will always choose the better option if they're in a race. They've got two guys. They don't want to impede one of their competitors at the cost of another. So they're doing the right thing strategically for a team. And I think Oscar, as long as he's sort of still settling in a little bit, you know, he has to put himself in a race forward as the best option for McLaren's overall race result. And when that happens, they'll say to Lando, let him through. If that ever happens, I mean, it is possible to get past without the other driver being asked to get out of the way, but it obviously is a lot simpler and a lot more efficient if they do that.
Who do you think has the better driver lineup at the moment, Ferrari or McLaren?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, Tom. Jesus, what do you think?
I would say Ferrari, and I mean Ferrari this year, not next year. Ferrari, because two proven race winners, and I would like to see that from McLaren, because what you were saying about Piastri, maybe Formula One nowadays is very much dictated on Saturday performance, on team orders, because track positions on the grid are very important in such a equal field. And Lando is a very strong driver on Saturday. That's maybe the thing that Oscar may need to be the first choice on McLaren. But on race, I really think that Piastri, we have to remember that Piastri is the only driver who beat Max last year on equal conditions, because Carlos won Singapore, but Max wasn't there. And Piastri beat Max on the sprint in Qatar, and he had a really impressive race.
Let's bring it on to Mercedes now. Their double DNF in Australia meant that this is their worst start to a season since 2012, when they also had just 26 points from the opening three Grand Prix. And Lewis Hamilton's power unit failure and George Russell's last lap crash left the team on less than half of what they had at the same stage last year. And they're already losing big ground in the Constructors' Championship, with Red Bull and Ferrari both more than two race victories ahead. So, guys, after reasonable optimism in the pre-season, are Mercedes actually going backwards?
Toto has agreed with him with this argument that they're scratching their heads. And then before Melbourne, I think it was saying they haven't taken a stupid pill or something like that. And he's actually sort of saying, well, if anyone's got any good ideas, then come and talk to me. I mean, that's the state of play there at Mercedes, isn't it? They are missing a trick. They're missing a trick. They've been given three goes at this, and they still haven't quite worked something out. The car gets it looks brutal to drive, actually. It looks always on the edge. When they try and get performance out of it, it gets very bouncy and very harsh. And there's something they're not quite getting. But as Toto said himself, I can't fire myself. You know, I'm part owner of the team, so he understands the situation. But it is sticky there, because you know Lewis has decided to get out of there and take his chances elsewhere. That's not exactly a huge vote of confidence in the direction of travel for Mercedes.
Well, I mean, okay, you brought up the subject of Toto Wolff, and he actually said after Melbourne that it was fair to question his future in the role of team principal. Yet, as you rightly say as well, Damon, you know, his situation is complicated by him being a shareholder in the team. So what happens next? If Mercedes continue to underperform, will Toto just step aside? Jesus, what do you think is going to happen at Mercedes over the next six months, 12 months?
If Mercedes wasn't the most successful team in the last 15 years, of course it would be a completely different scenario. But yes, Mercedes is in a very complicated situation. They're losing their champion for next year. The car is obviously not responding to whatever they see on the wind tunnel or on the factory. And Ferrari, even McLaren, are proving that it's not impossible to perform, to get closer to Red Bull in these regulations. So, yeah, Mercedes is not getting it right. And at some point, you have to make changes. Last year, I remember they had to take some decisions over the technical director, and they brought back James Allison on a strong role at the factory. But yes, if the car is not getting closer to Red Bull, and it has to happen because these regulations are getting older and the cars tend to convert. If the Mercedes is not doing that and some other teams are doing it, there has to be a problem and they have to point it out and sort it out.
James Allison wasn't in Melbourne, but he's made a couple of interesting points this week. One is that the car appears to be very track temperature sensitive, but also he questioned the simulation tools that they've got in the Brackley factory in the UK. And I'm just interested, that last point in particular, why now are the simulation tools becoming a problem when they've had, as Jesus says, all of this success over the last 10, 12 years?
So just to let everyone know that James Allison is their technical director. He's head of the science of the team running the car. And actually, it's interesting he said that, because I've often felt that I've started to think they've got something disconnected here, because they keep coming out with optimistic statements about their car. They believe they're going the right direction, and when the car gets on the track, it doesn't work. The likelihood is, and I'm not an engineer, as we have to keep saying, I'm a racing driver, ex-racing driver, but I mean, we know enough, don't we, Tom, about these things influence these race teams and the development of cars, particularly now that they have so much restriction on testing, actual running of the car at a track. So they're limited in doing real life experiments. they have to do it. They have to do it with using simulators. They have to use computer fluid dynamics. So it's computer. It's totally simulated. And then they have wind tunnels, and they have. But what they talk about is correlation. Is the information they're getting at the factory in their experiments actually leading them or misleading them? There's something missing in the calculation. When it comes to reality, something goes wrong. And I think if he's saying that, then that just reassures me that my hunch was also right. And also, if they start working on that, I think they're going to find something, because this is so important to be able to do the theory and then the practical experiment works and follows it up, because so far it hasn't been at all. I mean, they've been sitting there, the design team have been telling Toto, you know, this is great, this is going to work, and then it doesn't.
Damon, I think you're right. And the question now is how do they sort out the problems with their simulation tools, and how big a job is that? Maybe that's why Lewis Hamilton decided to leave, because he thought, hang on a minute, the project to get Mercedes back to the front is even longer term perhaps than we initially thought, because of the renewal of all the infrastructure back in Brackley. And maybe he lost patience. And I guess also that the start of this season that Lewis is having, I mean, he said at the weekend in Australia, it's the worst start to a season that he's ever had, even worse than 2009, when he didn't win a race at McLaren until the Hungarian Grand Prix in the middle of the season. So it's a difficult spot for Lewis. And Damon, I want to take you back to 1997, all right? Just months earlier, you'd won the world championship for Williams, and yet you failed to finish the opening six races of 1997 for Arrows. Just, I mean, how difficult was that? I'm just trying to say, can you relate to what Lewis is going through now?
Not really. I'll tell you why. Because we didn't have any expectations with Arrows. Now, the reason I was in an Arrows after having come out of winning a world championship, whatever it was, how many races in a season, it was because I got very short notice to go and find a new job, because my team owner, boss Frank Williams, had kind of rather hung me out to dry rather late in the day. So I ended up at the bottom. I stepped on a snake rather than a ladder, and I went back to the bottom and had to climb my way back up again with the Arrows. Now, at the start of the season, everything looked forlorn and desperate, and I hardly qualified, I think, or I couldn't get the car to run in Melbourne the first race. But there's this story I like to tell, which is about how I met this woman in the lift in Canada. And we'd had a bit of a torrid time, and there wasn't much hope. And I was in a lift going down to the racetrack. And this woman said to me, "Are you a driver?" I said, "Yes," proudly. She said, "So are you going to win? Are you going to win?" I said, "Well, I'm in an Arrows." And she said, "Yeah, but you're in the race, right?" And I said, "Well, yeah." She said, "Well, you've got a chance, haven't you?" So I thought, this put a spring in my step. You know, this optimism was a little bit misplaced, I thought, but at the same time, it was great to hear, you know. And lo and behold, only a few races later, I was leading the Hungarian Grand Prix. It can happen in Formula One. So Mercedes may unlock something. They may suddenly find the clue, the thing. It's always a tempting thing to think that there's this one thing that they just fix. Suddenly they'll leap forward. It's not impossible, but when you've had a disastrous start to a season like Lewis has had, the thing is, he's already got in his mind, I'm going to Ferrari at the end of the year.
Damon, what about, you know, he's now been out-qualified by George for the last five races, the first three of this year, the last two of 2023. You know, you've told me countless times in the time I've known you that, you know, it's speed. Racing drivers are measured on their speed. That's not going to sit easy with Lewis Hamilton, is it?
So I would like to take us back to the arrival of Alain Prost in Formula One alongside Niki Lauda. Niki realised he wasn't ever going to be as quick as this young whippersnapper who just turned up, who was frighteningly quick. So he took a different approach, which was, OK, I'm not going to out-qualify him, but I'm going to outrace him. You know, it is about the race. The race is where the points are. And he wasn't affected by the pride, if you like, of being out-qualified. We do apply this measure. We say, OK, well, someone is much quicker than another driver because of the qualifying one-lap pace. But it's no good if they can't keep it up. Or they're not tactically brilliant, or they're just not able to apply themselves in the same way. So, I mean, I think DC, David Coulthard, was much better in a race. By his own admission, I'm sure he'd say, he just didn't have the qualifying mindset, he was much better as a race driver. So we do find this disparity. It is two completely different disciplines. It's a total focus for just the one lap and getting yourself honed into this mindset of, I need to get this absolutely pin perfect every centimetre of the track. One lap focus. And there's this other personality that drives a car in a race, which is thinking strategically, some like Fernando Alonso. The strategy side of racing drivers is a different skill, and Niki Lauda had it in abundance, as does Fernando, as does Carlos as well, and I'd say probably Max as well. There are some drivers out there who are just built for the race.
Oh, and with your racing driver hat on still, do you think George Russell will bounce back from the crash in Melbourne no problems?
Yeah, no, I think he understood what happened there, and I think that he was very good at admitting some culpability in what happened, rather than just getting angry at Fernando, who clearly outfoxed him and put him in a very precarious position, and then it all turned out wrong for them.
I would say that if there is one driver capable of everything to defend his position and from someone else, that's Fernando. He will always go one step further, whether that's illegal or not. Of course, I'm not a steward. You can say with the images that he wasn't responsible of the crash itself. I think it's a harsh penalty. 20 seconds is one of the strongest penalty I remember on these recent years. And I'm Spanish. I can't help. I very like Fernando's style driving. Brazil last year as a very nice example of driving different lines, of doing just whatever you can to defend from a car that is just simply faster. And I think he was doing that. He was destroying George's corner to avoid the DRS, to get more turn exit speed. I think the penalty may be too harsh this time.
Fernando is such a competitor, isn't he, that I am convinced that we're going to see fireworks from him in Suzuka. He'll be fired up after that penalty in Melbourne, in the way that Max is going to be fired up at Suzuka after the DNF that he had in Melbourne. I think we're going to see some very talented drivers really, really going for it in Japan, which will be fantastic for us to watch. But guys, I did want to ask you about one guy who, well, certainly once upon a time, was mentioned in the same breath as the two guys that I've just mentioned. But Daniel Ricciardo, is he in a rut? Where is he at? Why can't he get a lap time out of that RB? Are his struggles now reminiscent of the struggles that he had at McLaren? Are we surprised by his form? I mean, Jesus, Daniel Ricciardo, discuss.
He used to be one of the most talented drivers on this grid, and he was sort of in a position as maybe Carlos now, as the only one who was beating the fastest car then, which was the Mercedes. His problem is Yuki Tsunoda, because there shouldn't be a fight between him and Yuki. He should be clearly ahead, also thinking about the Red Bull available next year. So yeah, it's kind of a sad situation, because he's one of the funniest and happier drivers on this grid, and he doesn't look like that anymore. Let's say, maybe some people may say that he's a driver for fast cars, and it's not that easy when you've been used to drive a top car. It's not easy to go back and fight again at the field. Some drivers are more experimented on that topic. It's kind of sad, isn't it? Because he used to be the star in Australia. We're coming from there, and now Piastri has sort of the upper hand in that.
I think he can drive a difficult car, Jesus. I mean, the 2014 Red Bull was not a good racing car, and he outperformed Sebastian Vettel in it. So I think he's proved that when he's happy in a car, even if it's difficult to drive, he can extract a lap time, which makes the whole situation now even more confusing. And I mean, Damon, we all know how ruthless Red Bull are with their drivers. Do you think they're going to give him time? I mean, there was that rumour going around at the weekend that he's only got until Miami, which Helmut Marko, the advisor for Red Bull, has now countered and said, no, that's not the case. But is Daniel feeling the pressure?
I think you're right to say that it's sort of reminiscent of what happened when he went to McLaren. He sort of And I remember, I think it was at Imola and doing some stuff with Sky, and he walked past and we were interviewing Lando, and he walked past and the news had come that he was going to be driving for McLaren alongside Lando. And he walked past and he went up to him and said, "I'm going to end you," in a kind of jokey way. And I remember thinking, ouch, that was a bit of a bold comment. And it was the other way around is what happened. And he never felt comfortable in McLaren. He was hunting all the time for setup. And the same story is coming out now from the RB. There's only so many times you can do that. Maybe he's one of these drivers who's matured too quickly, you know, and you get to the point where you become fussy about how you like your car. When you're young, when they're very young, they don't ask the question. I mean, look at Ollie Bearman. You know, they get one go, they don't know anything else, they just drive. And once you've had lots of experience, sometimes the experience overwrites everything else, and you're looking for that good experience again in a setup and a feeling from a car when it's not going to come because it's a different car. And someone like Yuki's been told, you've got to drive it, this is what it is, and he's just getting on with it. And Danny's looking for something else. And it happened with Sebastian Vettel as well. You know, once he lost the blown diffuser, suddenly it was more difficult for him to drive. Some drivers have a style and they need a setup, they need a kind of car, but they can't get it. And the question is, do the greats just get on with it and adapt? You know, someone like Senna, would he care how the car handled, or would he just overcome it, overpower it? And I think the latter is true. You know, it's at some point it's going to get, you have to go to Danny, listen, your career is about to evaporate, you just have to get over it and just drive this damn thing and not look for perfection. You're never going to find it. It's not coming, right? You're going to have to find a way to drive this thing and wring its neck, because you're getting beaten by. Now, the other thing is, it's a bit sad for us to interpret this as being Danny's lost form. Yuki's gained form. He's definitely driving brilliantly. You know, he's driving very well. So, you know, it's a little bit unfair to diminish Yuki's performance just because we assume it's Danny should be beating him. You know, I think Tsunoda has moved on leaps and bounds.
I would agree with you about Yuki. And I also think that it's quite difficult to judge Daniel on the back of Melbourne, because he would have made it through, I mean, coulda, woulda, shoulda, I know, but, you know, the track limits in Q1 prevented him from progressing to Q2, and had he started the race higher up, etc., etc. But there was an interesting point, actually, that RB team principal Laurent Mekies told us on the show last week as we were sat in the Melbourne paddock, as you no doubt remember, DH, is that Daniel, he said, hadn't been comfortable with the car until qualifying. So the suggestion being that he needs to just get up to speed with the car faster so that he can then be ready in qualifying to extract the time that he needs to extract from him. And that raises the question that we're now going to Suzuka, a racetrack that Daniel didn't drive at last year, remember, because he was recovering from his injured hand. And he's going to miss FP1 because Super Formula driver Ayumu Iwasa is going to be driving alongside Yuki in FP1, which means Daniel's only going to have FP2 really to do the serious mileage to understand the car there. Friday night being the last opportunity to make serious changes before we get into qualifying in the race. So I feel he's got a difficult weekend coming up in Suzuka.
Missing free practice one will not help, definitely. Also, you're competing against the local hero there. We have a free Red Bull seat available for next year. And Daniel was, I would say, the favorite last year when he got back and when he did that amazing test with the RB19. And suddenly, you wouldn't even think about him being part of the family in Red Bull. You wouldn't even think about him as a candidate for next year's Red Bull against Checo. So that says something. Maybe Formula One is going in other direction, and maybe Daniel is not following that trend. And I don't know. Maybe younger drivers coming. Maybe we will see. We will see. But if he gets less free practice in Suzuka and he doesn't get over this sort of fight against his teammate, it may be complicated during this first leg of the season.
Do you know what? It doesn't get any easier for him, because we then go to China, which is a sprint weekend. So, of course, he's only got the one practice session there to get his head around that car. But definitely a big weekend coming up for Daniel Ricciardo at Suzuka. RB currently lying sixth in the Constructors' Championship with those points that Yuki Tsunoda earned the team in Melbourne. The only other team on the grid that has any points so far this year are Haas. Double points finish for them last time out in Melbourne. And whilst they haven't perhaps got the fastest car, I think one thing we can definitely say is that Haas have overcome their tyre issues that they were getting in the races last year. And as a result, we're able to see Hülkenberg and Magnussen really take advantage of that and, you know, put it over the other teams. Look at Williams in Melbourne. You know, they were really struggling with tyre graining on Albon's car. Bam, Haas were there to take advantage.
It was quite awkward for us, I suppose, in some ways, Tom, and that we were working in Australia with Channel 10 and had Gunther with us. And the team seemed to have been making a bit of progress since he's left, which is, I'm sure he's happy about. Because, I mean, but the point is, what are they doing now that they didn't do when Gunther was there? You know, they seem to have come out with a totally different approach with Komatsu saying, we're going to do long runs in the testing and just work out why the hell we're routing the tyres. And it seems to have paid dividends, doesn't it? Because they're getting points.
And points are really much expensive right now when you see that five strong teams ahead from Red Bull to Aston. Kind of amazing that Haas has two races with points. It won't be easy this year to score points for the last five teams on the grid, and they've already done that in a very often way.
And Jesus, that is, of course, why Alex Albon inherited Logan Sargeant's car in Melbourne last time out. Sargeant is a man with a point to prove at the Japanese Grand Prix, a point to prove to the media, a point to prove, probably most importantly, to his team principal, James Vowles.
Yeah, that's a tough spot to be on. I think it's one of the hardest situations you can face as a driver, not to race just because there's only one car and it's not for you, because your teammate deserves more than you. I guess there's not something on Alex's contract that forced him to have the car if there's only one car. But it didn't look like that, according to James Bowles' explanation. So it was another harsh topic from Australia. Maybe we got a lot of things coming on during that weekend. Not only Max retiring, Ferrari winning, and a lot of things happening behind.
This is an advertisement from BetterHelp. Let's just take a moment to talk about something that we all carry around, but perhaps don't always pay enough attention to: our social battery. It's so easy to get swept up in trying to keep up with our responsibilities as social gatherings fill up our calendars, leaving us with little enthusiasm, energy, or resources to truly enjoy ourselves. And finding the right balance of socializing, meeting your work commitments, and everything else that life throws at you is crucial. And it all comes down to knowing yourself well enough to realize when you might be spreading yourself too thin. Even if you're worried you might be missing out on something, it's important to remember that everybody needs and deserves to take time to recharge before they find themselves running on empty. And that's where therapy can help. It's like a guiding light, helping you navigate your social life in a way that doesn't drain your battery. You might not realize it, but therapy isn't reserved for those with major trauma. It's for everyone ready to learn how to live their best life. It can help you learn how to set boundaries and positive coping skills so you can start to live your best life, however that looks to you. And with more than 1,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/F1Nation. That's betterhelp.com/F1Nation. It is now time to test your knowledge of the Japanese Grand Prix in Quiz the Nation. This is new for you, Jesus.
It is new for me. I don't know the rules.
We have four rounds: qualifying, sprint, race, and the podium. And then if the scores are level after that, we'll go to the stewards for a tiebreaker. All right? So let's go first with round number one, qualifying. You'll each face one quick fire question worth 1 point.
I don't even know why I'm bothering, Tom. I know what the result's going to be here. Look at his face. Jesus has been spent his life, reading up on Formula One statistics and everything.
But so have you, Damon.
No, I'm no good. I'm a Teflon mind.
Don't be put off by this, Jesus. So has Damon.
I'm afraid I will disappoint Damon.
Right, Jesus. The last time a Japanese driver finished on a Formula One podium was actually at the 2012 Japanese Grand Prix. Who was that driver?
Well, I would say Kobayashi, Kamui Kobayashi.
Kobayashi just beats Jenson Button, home for third place. And for the first time since 1990, a Japanese driver will stand on the podium here at Suzuka.
Fantastic, thank you guys.
That is a great start from our Spanish correspondent.
I'm relieved.
Kamui finished third in the 2012 Japanese Grand Prix. Right, Damon, put the books away. Which constructor has the most victories at the Japanese Grand Prix?
Constructor, Japanese Grand Prix, McLaren. Oh, I got it right. Well...
You got it right, you see? You surprised yourself. 9 victories for McLaren at the Japanese Grand Prix. And the driver with the most wins, in case you're asking at home, Michael Schumacher with 6. So, after round 1, it is 1-1. I can feel the tension. Let's go on to the sprint. This game, Jesus, is sudden death. I want you to name... the 19 drivers who have won the Japanese Grand Prix since its debut on the Formula One calendar in 1976. Each of you will take it in turns to name a driver. If you give an incorrect answer, repeat one that's already been given, or you just fail to provide one, then you're out.
Every driver? How long is this going to take?
This is a joke, right? This is a joke. I just have to name one.
Between you.
I see. Okay. I got you now.
The last person standing wins a point. So you're going to alternate and you're going to name a driver. All right, there are 19 winners. And Jesus, we're going to start with you. Name a driver who has won the Japanese Grand Prix.
Michael Schumacher.
Yeah, that 6 of them has already been taken by Jesus.
No, 19 drivers have won it. He's just happened to win 6, but there are 19 different names that I'm after. And
okay,
Jesus
right.
has started well with Schumacher. Damon.
All right, well, me, that's one.
See, you're always going to get one, won't you? Jesus, back to you.
Lewis Hamilton.
Very good, correct. Damon.
Nico Rosberg.
Correct. Jesus.
Kimi Raikkonen.
Very good. Damon, back to you.
We haven't had it in Senna yet, have we?
We have now. Very good. Jesus. Oh, it's getting to say that he's not being quite so chirpy now, is he? He's not being so chirpy. He's concentrating. Jesus, back to you.
Sepp Vettel.
Correct. Damon.
Is it all at Suzuka, or could be in Fuji as well?
No, Japanese Grand Prix since
Japanese
its debut Grand on the Prix. F1 calendar. So, I mean, 1976, people are wondering, was at Fuji.
I can say Nigel Mansell.
Damon.
Don't tell me Nigel Mansell never won the Japanese Grand Prix.
I've got bad news for you. Bad news for you and bad news for you and Nigel.
Nigel.
And good news for me.
Nigel. You let me down, man.
Do you remember he crashed out in 91? I think that's where he lost the
championship. I do remember now. Yes. Yeah, I remember that. But I thought he must have won it. Wow.
No.
God.
So, Hazel.
How can he not win it? What about 92? He must have won it, surely.
There we go. Jesus wins the point.
But what about Alessandro Nannini? Wasn't he one?
Correct. Look, for people at home who are wondering, Jesus has won this round, but for people at home who want to know all 19 drivers, Mario Andretti, James Hunt, Gerhard Berger, Ayrton Senna, Alessandro Nannini, Nelson Piquet, Riccardo Patrese, our man Damon Hill, Michael Schumacher, Mika Häkkinen, Rubens Barrichello, Kimi Raikkonen, Fernando Alonso, Lewis Hamilton, Sebastian Vettel, Jenson Button, Nico Rosberg, Valtteri Bottas and Max Verstappen. So Damon, the bad news for you is that it is now 2-1 to Jesus. And we're now going into the round that we call the race. This round is what happened next, and you're each going to hear some commentary from previous Japanese Grand Prix, and I want you to tell me what happened next to win a point. So Damon, we'll start with you. What happened next?
Another late lunge. Oh, contact! Unbelievable! Round goes the Haas. Contact again for Perez.
So Damon, that was in last year's race. What happened next?
What happened next? Last year's race. Blimey. Don't know. I mean, I haven't got a clue. Literally cannot think of anything. I mean, what happened next? That Checo's hit Haas.
So what happened to Checo? What as a result of that accident, what did Checo do? I'm feeling mean on Jesus now because I'm helping you.
I can't think of any. I mean, what else? What could he do? He had an accident. What did he carry on? What happened?
So I do remember you were at the race. Perez was forced to retire with damage at the end of lap 13. Then 41 minutes later, he unretired so he could serve his second 5-second penalty instead of taking it at the next race in Qatar. He completed three more laps and retired again. Does that ring a bell now?
It does now, yeah. It does. I mean, it wasn't really a major motorsport moment that I can honestly say I really sort of live by. I mean, but anyway, go on.
Okay.
It's interesting. Interesting.
It wasn't Senna Prost 1989 or 1990, but, you know, it's the rich tapestry, the rich history of the Japanese Grand Prix.
I should know, especially it's only last year.
Right, Jesus, your turn. What happened next at the 2005 Japanese Grand Prix?
Fisichella mustn't pull that trick again. If he's got to take the better line through the chicane, otherwise Raikkonen's going to have him down into turn one.
That Kimi won.
In a word, he
started last. Maybe I remember he started last that race, and Fernando had a very nice comeback too, but Kimi won. That's all I can say.
You're absolutely bang on. It was that one lap qualifying era, wasn't it? He started at the back, comes through and gets Fisichella.
Oh, and they nearly touched. Can Raikkonen sweep in? Yes,
yes!
He can. Brilliant.
What a brilliant move, side by side down the straight. Racing at its absolute finest. Kimi Raikkonen sweeps through to take the lead of the Japanese Grand Prix.
I remember that vividly, and I remember Ron Dennis, the boss of McLaren, being very animated after the race, which was unusual for good old Ron. Right, now Damon, we're coming into the podium round now, and we need a big round from you. We need a pole position. We need a good quali run from you here. We need a big lap, okay? So what happens? The podium is the final round of this week's quiz, and your task is to reveal which mystery Formula One guest I'm talking about. I'll give you three clues in total, one at a time. If you guess correctly after the first clue, you'll win 3 points. After the second clue, you'll receive 2 points. And after the final clue, just a single point. All right, once you think you know the answer, shout it out.
So I can't get nil points?
Well, you will if Jesus wins.
Oh, yeah. Okay, right, okay. Ah, oh, yeah, right, okay.
This is for 3 points, all right? Clue number one. This person was born in Tokyo. Any idea for 3 points?
Takumi Sato.
Jesus, any idea? You can we'll continue on even if you get this wrong.
Another Japanese driver. Satoru Nakajima.
That's a good name. That's a blast from the past, Satoru Nakajima, but you are both wrong. Right, clue number two. Now, this is just for 2 points, and Damon needs these 2 points if he's going to level the score, okay? So, Damon,
yep.
I don't want to put any more pressure on you, but if you don't get it on this clue,
yeah,
actually, you lose the quiz this week, all right? Are you ready for this?
Okay.
Clue number two. Before joining his current team, this person worked for BAR Honda, Renault and Lotus.
Ukio Katayama.
Incorrect. Jesus, we're starting your victory lap now, but Jesus, who do you think?
Yeah.
You're both obsessed with drivers. Think laterally.
Maybe some engineer or...
I know. It's all good about now. It's obvious.
But I don't know.
All right. Last clue. This is for 1 point. Now, fingers on buzzers, because you'll get this immediately. This person became a Formula One team principal for the first time in 2024.
Ayo Komatsu.
Ah.
Easy. Boom. Hill is in there. But I'm afraid, Damon, we don't need to go to our tiebreaker this week, because Jesus wins 3-2. Jesus, well done. Many congratulations.
Congratulations, Jesus.
Thank you.
It's been a great week for Spain.
It is. It has been a great week. And we don't have to go to the stewards.
I'm going to have a word with Tom after this show.
Well, we can sort that out. Damon, when are you next at a race?
I'm not at Japan, but I'm in a studio in a mystery place in London, close to where Sky do their broadcast. So I'm going to be getting up some ungodly hour to do a broadcast in a dark room where we connect up with Suzuka, and we'll be deeply involved in the race that way.
We need to get you and Jesus together so that Jesus can celebrate his victory. Just out of interest, if we'd needed the tiebreaker, the question was going to be this. How many pit stops were there in total at last year's Japanese Grand Prix? Just have a guess.
42.
What? Now, Damon, I have to say, that was pretty good. The answer was 43, Jesus. Were you going to come in close to 43?
Impressive. I wouldn't have even been closer to that. I would have said 70.
Look, many congratulations, Jesus. You are our winner of Quiz the Nation this week.
He's not coming back, Tom. He's not. Don't tell him he's not coming back.
Jesus, you're not allowed back. Sorry.
only when Carlos wins again.
Podium predictions for the Japanese Grand Prix. Who wants to go first?
I can. But I will be...
Go on.
Boring. I will say Max, Checo and Carlos.
Okay, in that order. Damon?
Right. I think Carlos Sainz is going to win, Max second, and third is going to be Lando Norris. How about that? If I'm right...
That would be a brilliant podium. Bring it on.
Be good, yeah.
I've just got a feeling, guys, that Max is going to bounce back. What we were saying earlier in the pod. I think it's going to be Max, but I do think McLaren are going to be stronger this weekend. And I just think back to Oscar Piastri getting that P2 on the grid last year. I think his racecraft is better this year. So I'm going to go Max, Oscar Piastri, Carlos. There you go. Let's check in with our F1 fantasy team now, F1 Nation Racing. We had a bit of a shocker in Australia, to be honest, scoring just 83 points, which I think might be a record for our lowest ever total. The top three teams in the F1 Nation World Championship all had the triple threat of Charles Leclerc, Carlos Sainz and Ferrari in their lineup for Melbourne. So we're going to take a leaf out of their book for the Japanese Grand Prix. Damon fancies Carlos Sainz for the win, and I think Oscar Piastri will get on the podium at Suzuka again. So those two are in the team, along with home favourite Yuki Tsunoda, Alex Albon and Kevin Magnussen. And we've picked Ferrari and Williams as our constructors. F1 Fantasy is free to play. You can create your own team on the official F1 website or app, and then join the F1 Nation World Championship to compete against us, and probably beat us, and other listeners. And remember, you have until the start of qualifying for Japan to make your changes. Good luck. Guys, thank you very much to Damon Hill and to Jesus Balsero. Wonderful to have you both on the show. Look forward to seeing you, Jesus, in the Suzuka paddock, and Damon, I'll see you soon. Thank you very much to all of you at home for listening. I hope you enjoyed the quiz as well. And on the topic of Ayo Komatsu, I did have a fascinating conversation with Ayo for this week's episode of F1 Beyond the Grid. which is going to be available on all podcast apps and on YouTube on Wednesday of this week. And don't forget that you can be at a race this season. Tickets for China, Miami, Imola and the rest of the races are now on sale. Just go to tickets.formula1.com to book your seat. We'll be back next week from the Suzuka paddock with our review of the Japanese Grand Prix. But for now, thanks for listening. F1 Nation is produced by Formula One and Audioboom Studios.